Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the podcast where two rivals meet, Crystal Palace and Brighton and Hove Albion. Football's equivalent to arguing with your neighbour about whose lawn is worse.
This week at Palace, an important win in the Conference League and a frustrating loss at home to Man City.
And this week at Brighton, the Seagulls travelled all the way to Liverpool but forgot to pack a goal scorer.
We'll discuss all this and much, much more, because this is Seagull Eagle.
Hello, Andy.
Neil. Merry Christmas. Is it too early for that?
No, I think you're bang on. I think like a couple of weeks before Christmas, I think that's when we should be doing it, yeah.
I mean, mate, I've had my work's Christmas party. I've wrapped a few presents.
How was the Christmas party?
It was all right. It was in the Boom Battle Bar. Have you been to one of them?
Oh, I have. I went to one of them down West Country Way. I can't remember where it was. But yeah, they're quite cool. There's lots of things to do in there.
Mate, it was great. We were like throwing axes at each other, karaoke...
Not at the same time, surely.
No. But no, it was, yeah, good fun, mate. Good fun.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, got back in time on Thursday just to see the majority of that game.
Ah, the Palace Shelbourne.
Everyone was like, do you want another drink? No, gotta go. Gotta see if Palace crash out of Europe or not. But yeah, have you had a good week?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Plodding along, like you said, a bit of a countdown to Christmas, as it were. Mm. I finish work this week, so it's quite nice. I've got another few days, then I'm done until the end of the year, which is quite a nice feeling.
So you're dodging the 2 days of next week, which I completely forgot about, actually. I was counting down to Friday, and then I got reminded, no, it's actually Wednesday. But yes. Also, can I just note for the listeners of the podcast that we are neighbours, right?
Obviously.
And it is legit. We do live next door to each other. I just want to say thank you for participating in Christmas this year. It has been noted that you have put some Christmas lights outside, out the front, and it's lovely to see. And my children are appreciative of your Christmas efforts.
Thank you.
Well done.
I decided to remove myself from the Ebenezer Scrooge pile and do something about it this year. So
you didn't go Grinch, you went traditional.
I went Trish. Yeah, I went proper Trish Ebenezer. That's where I went.
Yeah. Brilliant. No, your lights look very nice.
Thank you, mate.
Very nice.
Much appreciated. Listen, we've got a fair chunk to get through. Three games again this week. Double game week for you, one for us. I suppose let's do a Brighton sandwich. Let's start with the Palace game, who they faced Manchester City this weekend. Should we talk about it? What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, we can talk about it. And I'm sure the Brighton fans won't mind listening to this one as well.
Let's do it. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, Crystal Palace 0, Manchester City 3.
Boom.
So obviously it was on Sunday. Went there to watch us self-destruct. No, in fact, we didn't.
it wasn't that bad, to
be honest with you. I'll talk about it, mate, but it wasn't actually bad at all.
No, I agree.
It's one of them games where you come out of that and go, that scoreline's from a different game to the game that I just watched. And it's, mate, we've had this conversation week after week, right? And you remember, I think I only said to you last week, when was the last time that Palace lost a game and actually played badly? And I can't remember.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I know.
It's like, it's one of them ones where you go, do you know what? You're actually, you're a better team because you took the chances and you've got, you know, a team and a substitutes bench full of world-class players who can turn a game, you know, at a pivot. So, mate, you can't argue. And the Man City that we played on Sunday was, for me, a Man City that are on the way up and are going to be giving Arsenal a run for their money.
They are indeed.
So
I totally agree with you.
It's
there.
Not the Man City of last season that, it, you know, things were up for grabs. Anyway, look, winless in 10 Premier League home games against City.
That many?
Mm.
I do. Yeah, okay.
And I think if you take the stats back to 20 Premier League home games, it doesn't look much prettier. I think there's a couple of wins and draws in there. I think the last win we had against them at home was under Alan Pardew.
Wow.
Back in 2015, who's now doing adverts with Sam Allardyce and things like that. He's that old.
Nice.
Anyway, lineups. We made five changes from the Shelbourne team from last Thursday. Saar was back from injury.
That was a surprise for me. I wasn't expecting him back so soon.
Me too.
But was it a shock to everyone then?
Yeah. I when Glasner said it in the news conference prior to the game, I was really shocked, and I didn't think he'd do a full game either, which he did. But also, I think Saar's probably quite keen to get some game time before he goes to AFCON, which I do believe is next week. week.
Right, yes, it is. Yeah, everybody has to leave this at some point at time of recording this week. Yes,
there you go.
Yeah.
So I think that potentially is his last game for us until maybe end of Jan. So there we go.
And oh, well.
Oh, no, innit? And then Henderson, Mitchell and Mateta return.
Yeah.
And Klein stepped in for Muniz.
Who, oh, I didn't notice that. He continued, did he?
He was in for Muniz because obviously he's the next one there.
Yeah.
So you've got Muniz, who's clearly nowhere near being ready yet. He's going to be out for another couple of games at least. So, yeah, that was a bit of a shocker for me because I was a little bit like, maybe we might mix things a bit up. I know that Canvo's played in that kind of position before a little bit, or do they do inverted and put Borna Sosa there or something? I don't know. I thought there might have been some other ways because 34-year-old on the wing running up and down box to box is a bit of a challenge, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Also, two games in a run as well.
Two games in a run against one of the best teams in the world. Let's be honest, they are at the moment, right?
Yeah.
So, and I have to keep reminding myself that it's not just your average week. You are playing one of the best teams in the world, just like you were this week.
Yeah.
So you've got to put it into perspective. Anyway, first off, I think we started really well. Pino had the first early chance, but wandered offside. There was a lot of wandering offside. However, I've misquoted that. It's not really wandering offside. Man City were remarkable at the whole playing the offside trap. And I was, you know, like I do a bit of coaching with my son's football team. And I've been trying to explain to that team how to do that. Because trying to explain offside rules to 13-year-olds is very difficult. And me and my son sat and watched that on Saturday. Because obviously where we were sat, you're nearly bang on in line with the defence sometimes, like as it's going backwards and forwards. And it was a really good lesson to him, actually, on how Man City defence played our strikers off, even though they weren't off just before that kick. But as soon as that ball was kicked, there was a little step forward. And they, you know, Man City were really good at that.
The thing I noticed as well, it's like from a Pep perspective, the tactics of this, it's obvious, yet you've got to be really good at it, which is, you know, we know how Crystal Palace want to play. As soon as the ball gets into someone like Wharton, you know that they're looking for that through ball. And so
the middle as well.
Absolutely. So you know that's what they're doing. And it looked like a trigger point for them. As soon as Wharton got the ball, they were tight at that back line. And they caught them offside quite a few times.
Yeah, no, they really did. It was quite frustrating, actually. Klein had the next early chance with some lovely flicks between Sarr and Mateta. But he hit it on his left foot. And somehow managed to miss the target. I've watched that a few times now and I just can't believe that didn't go in. That was the first one where I was like, it's going to be one of these games.
Yeah.
And you just know, mate, you know as well as I do from a Brighton perspective, you're like, oh, here we go. Yeah. After half time, we're going to regret that. But we did look really good throughout that first early period. Like, you know, like quick passing, high intensity, runs in behind. Like it was all there. Everything, all that formula was there apart from that one final kick or even just hitting it away from the keeper or, you know, whatever it would have been. Yeah. It just didn't quite click. The chances continued. Pino was gifted a lovely chip by Walton and was clean through, but he couldn't keep it down and hit the crossbar. This was the one that I looked at and I was just like, how? Did
I think
that
so
not
too.
Go in?
That one, when you look at all the different chances that Palace had, I think that one was the one that just looked the clearest, looked the most obvious to get an opportunity to actually go one up.
And was at a time that could have considerably changed the game, right?
Totally,
because when you, at being Palace, if you go 1-0 down, you're then pushing yourself even further up, you're playing a higher line, and obviously that's how you end up with a score like 3-0 when you're searching, because you ain't going to give up.
Yeah.
But anyway, Sarr and Pino and Kamada all had chances shortly after. So it was literally that, to be honest with you, that first 60 minutes really of the game, we were in control. We had, you know, really, really good midfield play. But as I said, Man City were playing the offside trap well, and our final kind of that final touch in the box just wasn't there. I think it was 30 minutes on the clock until Man City had their first chance by my calculations, i.e. first good chance, with Phil Foden tested Henderson with that free kick, but he had that well covered. And then I think 41 minutes, our good friend Haaland, who to be brutally honest, I'd forgot was even playing that game.
He does that though, doesn't he?
41 minutes, mate. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know the official stats on this, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was his first or second touch of the game.
Yeah.
He got his head to Nunez's cross for his 16th goal of the season.
It's a lovely header. I mean, it was
mate,
a classic,
it was good,
wasn't it? It was a classic head. You know, hit it back the way it came, past the keeper. And you just... The only thing that surprised me about that goal was the marking of the defenders, if I'm honest, because when you look at the marking, there isn't anyone else really in that box.
But he weren't. This is the because I looked at this and I was like, because Richards was meant to be marking, right? Richards jumps for the ball, but obviously it goes over his head, and you know, Haaland's got a good foot or whatever, even over Richards and his hair. But I think like Haaland wasn't there when the ball came in. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
that's what he does,
so
right?
Good.
He times it so well so that you don't even know he's in the vicinity. And we don't often get caught out like that in open play. Yeah. But again, that's why Man City are Man City.
Absolutely.
And that's why Haaland is Haaland, right?
Yeah.
There ain't no stopping that. 1-0 Man City. And the whole stadium, I don't know, it went very quiet.
I mean, I'm not surprised.
Like, very quiet. More quiet than normal,
mate.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Like, to the point of, I think there was just a bit of shock, which was, we've just done, 41 minutes of basically shooting practice against Man City and made them not look very good.
Like you said, maybe it was a little bit of resignation as to, oh, God, we've had all these chances, we haven't put them away. They've scored now.
Yeah.
This is just going to be one of those days.
Yeah, and I think that's what it was. I think that's what it was. But we came back fighting, which we normally do. When we go 1-0 down at home, straight back at it, and Mateta had a chance pretty much straight away. Keeper got down at full stretch and turned it away. And I think there was a bit of a, okay, we can do this, we can do this. Half-time whistle blew at the wrong time, to be fair, because obviously they're 1-0 up. Another game where the scoreline didn't match the play on the field at half-time. A bit of a hill to climb against a very good Man City who are clearly turning the corner now. Second half, 5 minutes in, Walter nicked the ball off Gonzalez and did that consistently. Walton and Kamada were superb in that midfield position.
I think they're really starting to gel together as well as a pair now. Now, they've played enough games. I mean, obviously, they're playing enough games, but you know what I mean? As a pair, they seem to play off each other really well now.
They were just superb. They were absolutely superb. And obviously, Walter nicked that ball, beat the keeper. What did he do, Neil?
oh, let me guess.
Hit the post.
I think this is the thing, isn't it? It's like, we've seen this movie before with your lot. And usually they get enough chances to score a goal and hold on. But this way round, because they conceded first, I just felt like the writing was on the wall a little bit. The pressure was on them to score, if you know what I mean.
Oh, mate. But the thing is, though, that the chances were still being created. And obviously, look, Walton's hit the post again.
Mm.
And look, there's no hate on Walton here, right? He's one of our best players and probably one of the best midfielders in the Premier League right now. Do you know how many goals he's scored for us since he signed from
Blackburn? I actually don't, but I can't believe it's many.
None.
Oh, really? None?
None.
Yeah, that's not good enough.
And I'd love to see the stats on how many times he's hit the woodwork, but he obviously, in his position, he does shoot from range.
Yeah.
But I think all he needs to do is get that first goal.
And also, he is the assist man. Like, the whole point of the style that you guys play, he's the one that should be looking for threading those through balls through.
But I think it's just, it's one of the ones where it's like, it's just the luck of the draw. If you look at all his attempts on goal this season...
Yeah.
Over half of them should have gone in. But someone was in the way. The keeper made an epic save. The wind was blowing the wrong direction. Whatever it is, he just needs to get one out of the way and he'll be fine, I think, because he had another good attempt midweek as well. We move on. Henderson then made a good save with his feet down the other end. It was basically a one-on-one to keep us in the game, which I thought Henderson did really, really, really well, actually, there. And then on the hour mark, Glasner brought on Nketiah to replace Mateta, which I wouldn't have made that sub. Mateta wasn't, I wouldn't say he was having a shocker, but he wasn't taking his chances, but he was contributing in other ways. And I would have taken off Saar and brought Nketiah on.
So what do you think he was trying to do? Because they're two very different players. So was it Mateta's tired? Was it
we need to change the way in which we're playing slightly? Or what do you think it is?
I think we were finding the pockets and we were getting the balls over the defence. Mm. And I think he was going for the pace situation because Nketiah is scoring.
Yeah, good point.
So I think he was going for the, you know, run through on goal, all the other bits and pieces. And also, yeah, just to kind of put some fresh legs on because Nketiah is quick, right? And obviously, Mateta, I can't remember what the official stats are, but I don't think he scored in like last six Premier League games.
I think
or something
you're about
like
right
that.
There. Yeah.
Again, don't quote me on that. I haven't researched it, but he is drawing blanks at the moment. He scored in a couple of cup games. He scored for France, but Premier League, he's having a bit of a drought at the moment. Funny that, because he's midway through contract negotiations. He normally comes alive when the contract negotiations are going on. But anyway, Hughes replaced Kamada. Because Kamada got injured.
Oh dear.
So
another one.
He limped off in the second half after a challenge with Gonzalez, I think it was. Looks like a hamstring stretch.
Does it?
Be out for probably a good couple of weeks. He was having a scan today. We haven't really heard anything more from that. But it's such a shame, Neil, because as I said, he was superb on Sunday. Just like passing ability, pressing, positional, like really kind of that player that was the end of last season when we turned good, you know?
I mean, I remember, obviously, we've done this podcast for a while now, and at the beginning when we started to do this podcast, Kamada was pretty new to Palace. And you had
it was
a few,
shocking, mate.
Yeah, you had a few question marks, and so did a few fans. It's taken him a little while, but now, and at the end of last season, but this whole season, I would say now, apart from maybe his goal scoring, his general work as a midfielder has been top draw.
Mate, it's been brilliant. And much to the dismay of the bloke that sits behind me, who still gives him grief.
Oh, we always have those.
Because do you know what? There is the situation when you're playing that high intensity, and, you know, Glasner's tactic was like one touch football in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine? Like, there was no room to do anything in that midfield. And no sooner did you get the ball, you had two players on you from both sides. So there's going to be passes going astray. There's going to be, you know, not, you know, reasonably bad pass completion.
Yeah, sure.
Because we don't keep possession. That's the difference, right?
No, you don't want possession. You're
exactly.
Not that fast. Yeah, I get it.
So I think, yeah, there were a couple of instances, right? But I am gutted now because that's him and Munoz out, Sarr going to AFCON. And my question going forward now is, we missed Munoz in this game because he's the one that would have been at that back post, even though he was at right back 2 seconds later, he would have been in that back post to clear up some of these. It just hit the post or it was going wide. And a few goals were coming in from him as opposed to our strikers, right? And then obviously Sarr makes up for the deficit if Mateta's not scoring.
Sure.
But now we've got Mateta scoring blanks and the other two not in. And like, let's be honest, if this was last year, Eze probably would have won us that game.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm not like, it's not panic stations for me, but I'm also wondering between now and the January transfer window, I'm really hoping that Uche comes good, like he did against Shelbourne, and gives us a bit of an outlet for goals because someone's got to hit the net, right?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about it more maybe next week a little bit, but you've got, you know, X number of games now, probably about 5 or 6 games probably until the January transfer window opens. But even at that point, the question will be, have you got anybody lined up? Do you know what I mean? Are you going to get people through the door January the 1st, which is obviously what you're going to need at this rate with injuries and the just the sheer number of games that you guys have got. It's going to be, you know, that doesn't sound like Palace's way, though. They sort of tend to obviously look for the bargains and try and get the right deals across the line. So that's going to be the question mark.
I think it'd be a bit of both, mate. I've heard some rumours. We'll talk about it next week, but I've heard some rumours and some rumours that have been substantiated.
Oh, okay, cool.
Of people that are, you know, in talks.
All right, well, let's do a little, like you say, transfer roundup maybe next week. We'll have a little chat about it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Anyway, we've about 20 minutes left of the game now, and this is before it gets even worse, right? So City then landed the sucker punch, and it was, I hate to say it, mate, but it was a moment of real quality. And even as a home fan sat there watching it, I nearly applauded, like, because it was that good. Like, Shirky kind of charged towards the box, passed it to Foden, and he just, it was super, wasn't it? It was such a good goal.
It
and
really
Henderson
was.
Had no chance.
It was a lovely goal. And I think, Ryan Shirky is someone who anyone who's played FIFA over the years will be going, yeah. Oh yeah, he's fantastic. We love him. He's such a young kid. He was originally. He's still very young now. But at Lyon, I think he was at. You know, he came into the first team at like 16. Do you know what I mean? So people have known about him for a long time. Moving to Man City, and now in the way that they're playing, their new formation, their slight change, him and Foden together with a winger on the other side, whether it be, you know, Savinho or any of them really, Doku. Just, oh, I mean, they are so tasty to watch.
Mate, and you just know, unlike Palace at the moment, like we've got all the build up, but no kind of final touch.
Yeah.
You know damn well that if they've got the ball and they're unmarked, that's going in. And Foden's finish.
I mean, just passed it into the net almost from outside the box. It was so strange. Mate.
How we
do you know what I mean though? Because you're looking at him going, you're waiting for him to do the big hit, and it's like he just passes it to another colleague, basically all he does, but he just passes it into the bottom corner.
At such pace.
It was fantastic.
At such pace. So yeah, that was difficult. And also that was the point where the undercover Man City fans sat in the main stand, revealed themselves, and quite a few people got chucked out.
Yeah, I'm sure that happens a lot.
Because that was probably quite difficult to hide. They're celebrating that goal, I would imagine.
Is that Palace fans not selling out their stadium? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, mate. I think what's happening is that's tourists buying things off a Ticketmaster, isn't it? It was full. Full, mate.
Full of Man City fans.
Anyway, we pushed a lot higher because we still believed at that point that we might be able to get maybe a point out of it with the amount of chances we created, and obviously left ourselves quite a lot to do to defend if that was the case. Savinho broke from deep in the Man City half, and then obviously it was a one-on-one, right? Yeah, I'm sure you saw this with Henderson, and Henderson did what any keeper could do at that point, which is not get himself sent off, hopefully, and bring him down and claim he didn't mean to do it.
No, I agree.
And then this is one of my favourite moments of the game, which you've got to take them little moments, Neil, when you lose 3-0 at home.
Yeah, go on.
Which was that Haaland steps up for the penalty. Mm. And as soon as Haaland steps up for the penalty against Henderson, or in front of the Holmesdale, the whole Holmesdale lower and upper tier started singing, "Where were you at Wembley?" In reference to the fact that he bottled the penalty and gave it to Marmoush, I think.
Yes, right.
Who then obviously got it saved by Henderson. And I was thinking to myself, and it was loud and it was proud and it was quite. I was hoping it would be significantly off-putting enough that he would bottle it, which he clearly did not. But it really did make me laugh. I wanted to join in singing, but I couldn't because I was too busy laughing.
Speaking of another thing that made me laugh about this game, I don't know if you've seen it on social media, there's a guy recording some of the game on his phone, like everyone does. He's in the same stand as you, actually, and he's screaming at Nico O'Reilly about the quality of his passing and all this sort of stuff. And the thing that really does it is the fact that he's screaming at him, and then he says, "How much do you get paid?" You know, and he starts swearing and all this sort of thing. And Nico O'Reilly just looks at him and starts laughing, which is quite funny.
Oh,
so he actually recognizes him. He notices him, and I'll send it to you. But it's very funny to watch. Just a little nothing, you know, little something. Just the fact that the players can hear you, you know, and they do pick up on things. Yeah. It was just done very lightheartedly, but you just looked at him and sort of like noticed when he said about how much money is he earning and all that sort of thing.
That's great.
It was funny.
I think the other little moment that I got from this was, I can't remember what part of it was throughout the game, but Glasner and Pep had words with Glasner.
Right.
And I think it was due to maybe a bit of a heavy tackle that went in.
I saw them chatting and it looked okay, but also at the same time with both of them, you never quite know because it can get quite heated.
It was I found it really funny because obviously watching Glasner a lot in the media and stuff, you kind of get an impression on whether... Has he got the beef or is he taking the beef?
Yeah, yeah, gotcha.
And it was clear that Pep had beef, but not in a, like, Pep wanted to get his point across, and Glasner was respectfully listening, but you don't often see that in the middle of a game.
No,
right?
I found that very strange.
Very strange. And
was he asked about it afterwards or anything? Or do you know what it was about?
I haven't heard anything about it. I think there's assumptions on social media that it was that one of the Palace players went in for a bit of a stronger tackle because I think one of their players went off injured, didn't they, at one point?
Yeah. Oh, well, look, if anyone out there knows why they were chatting or knows the reason why, if there's anything that comes, send us a link on X or on Seagull Eagle. That'd be great. We know more about it.
But what made me laugh about it was, though, mate, was that Glasner like from, he was kind of, so Pep was stood to his left, right? So the left-hand side of Glasner's face was like deep in concern and understanding about what Pep was saying. And then the bottom right of his mouth was like... Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, there's that little quiver there where you're like, shut up, you muppet. Yeah, yeah, I get you.
So clearly, yeah, there you go. Anyway, moving on. As I said, gutted Kamada's injured. I think summary from my perspective on this game, first hour, we outmatched them in energy and intensity, and I loved watching it, right? Even when we were down, I loved watching it. Wharton and Kamada nicking the ball off of these world-class players like they're in the playground, you know, threading it through to get in someone, and it's just that last bit. I think, and funny enough, Glasner said the same thing. He said after the game that he thinks that was a better performance today than our previous two away wins. He also said that he thought it was our better performance and we played so much better than we did when we played them at Wembley. At Wembley, the goals went in. And it was the opposite way round. He basically described it and said it was Man City who didn't take their chances in that game. Yeah. And it was Palace who did. It was kind of the opposite way round. I think the scoreline was just, truthfully, I think it was quite flattering to Man City. That wasn't a 3-0 game.
No, no. I mean, I was going to say that, you know, as a neutral-ish sort of person, I looking at that game, seeing what I've seen of it, and to talking to other people as well, I think you're absolutely right. I think Palace showed up, they had a right go, and they absolutely should have scored at least a goal, at least.
Well, technically 2.08 goals.
Just about to say, their XG, I mean... have you got it there, actually, what the XG was?
Well, XG for Palace was 2.08 and open play, 1.75.
Yeah, that's not bad against City.
Right. XG for Man City, 1.19. XG from open play, 0.31.
And that just points out how good they are.
Well, this is what I'm saying. They're scoring goals from nothing.
Yeah.
So the XG isn't identifying it as a goal-scoring opportunity.
No.
I mean, that is mad. And you look at the shots, 16 from Palace, 7 from City. On target, 4 from Palace. Bearing in mind, I mean, just the woodwork still doesn't count as...
Off target.
Yeah. So obviously, we hit the woodwork twice.
Yeah.
I think we're one of the first teams to hit the woodwork twice in a week. There you go. There's a good stat. And obviously, a target for City was 6. So, mate, look, to summarise, we can talk about it all day. Look, City are City.
Yeah.
They're a great world-class team on form at the moment. They beat us. But do you know what? I'm all right with it. I'm all right with it because if we play like that in the next game against Leeds, we'll spank them 2-0 or 3-0.
Yeah.
So a good performance. It wasn't to be. On with the next one. I believe we're still in fifth as we stand.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Oh, yes!
Right, Neil. I've talked about a poor home game from Palace. You were away.
Yes.
With, to be honest, not too much of a difference in terms of challenge on your hands.
No.
Another... team who are, well, champions, technically.
Current champions.
Yep.
Yep.
Even though they haven't been showing it in the previous weeks, but no. I do feel like they might have come good at the wrong time for you.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was, we talked about this last week and I said, look, I'm not going to continue to predict what Brighton are going to show up because you never know what's going to happen. And I think to the neutral, anyone that was watching that game on Saturday that obviously finished 2-0 to Liverpool, that most people would say Brighton gave them a good game. Pretty much the similar sort of concept as the Palace-Man City game, that we showed up, we gave them a good game, we went toe-to-toe with them. The biggest sort of headline as to what happened would probably be that we just didn't take our chances.
I can't disagree with that, mate, because the game that I watched the extended highlights, so just without the drab bits, and it looks very similar frustrations to what I watched in terms of... so many touches in the opposition box, so many chances, but just not the final thing. And Minte, wow.
Well, I mean, about that in a minute. Yeah, look, I've got frustrations, but they might be different to what a lot of people have got. And so I'll get to that right at the end and talk about the summary.
Because
there's a few tactical things that I've got a hill to die on that I need to have a discussion about, because it's just been annoying me for a while, and so I want to have a chat about it. Let's just go start from the beginning. Lineups, right? So Jack Insherwood started his first proper start since coming back from that long injury.
Good for him.
That was good. I'm really pleased for him. Started in midfield. Ayari, who has been injured for the last couple of weeks, was back on the bench. Thankfully, Karu Matoma's finally back. Was on the bench. He got onto the pitch with about 25 minutes to go. It was his first game since September. So I wasn't expecting miracles from him, but it was just nice to get him back out on the pitch and playing.
Should be back up to speed in the new year.
Exactly, probably. Mate. Yeah. Exactly. So Inchwood in midfield, Gruder in the 10, Jorginho number 9. So again, no Welbeck. So we didn't start Welbeck again. And I'm wondering, well, I know why. I suppose it's the legs. It's the chasing down, I suppose he's thinking, and then we'll bring him on later in the game or something. So it was fine. Milner was back on the bench as well, by the way, which is always good. Made it just in time for his little annual trip to Anfield. So it was, how do I even describe the first 43 seconds of that game? We started the game. We lost the ball. Liverpool booted it into our corner. They got a throw. They lost it. We got it. And Minte, I'm struggling.
Mate, it was a great cross. It was a brilliant cross.
He gets caught in the corner, decides to hit a cross field ball straight into the heart of the pitch for Liverpool to attack. Gomez heads the ball down. Ekitike, you've all seen it, scores. Albion are punished straight away. You know, you train all week. You plan. You put a plan together. And what happens? 45 seconds. Boom. Brilliant.
Can I be totally honest? And you're never going to believe me when tell you this, but this is 100% true.
Yeah.
When I watched them extended highlights, right? I think it was last night when I watched them. I immediately went, what a cross. And then I realised that it was Minte that had put the ball there.
Yeah.
And I mean, what an absolutely absurd thing to have done.
I feel like there's such a reluctance these days to just kick the ball out. Players do everything they can to try and keep the ball in. And this was just one of those perfect examples of when just kicking the ball out and taking your medicine would have been fine.
Well, I guess the problem being these days is that with the long throws being the new set pieces, if you kick the ball out in that area, it's as good as giving away a corner.
But at least you're prepared for it. You're not prepared for your own player crossing the ball into a striker almost.
But this is what I don't understand. He didn't need to.
No.
He could have kept it on that right wing as opposed to across the face of... it's just mad.
I'm there with you, mate.
I can only assume, you know, like when you played that game in the park where you used to spin your friend around, and then like once you've been spun around, you kind of don't quite walk in. Maybe you just did
just
that.
Didn't
a bit.
Work
you
it
just
out.
Didn't quite work out where he was at.
Whatever it was.
I mean, don't get wrong, mate. I was loving it.
Yeah.
But
I mean, whatever it was.
Madness.
Just stuffed up our plans completely, obviously, from that point. But, you know, it wouldn't be Brighton without going a goal down and seeing what we can do about it. So
boring otherwise.
For the next hour of the game, though, Andy, the next hour of that game, Albion played pretty well in most parts, right?
Yeah.
The match was pretty even. It was very open. Albion had a couple of really good chances in the first half. Minte had a couple, really. Gruder had a half chance in the first half. The second half, when we came back into the second half, there was a few opportunities there as well. And Gomez and Gruder, again, having really good opportunities. The big one was probably 51 minutes. So we get to this, and I've whipped through the first half. And the reason I've done that is because it was just end-to-end. There was a few half chances, and Brighton probably had the better of the chances. But the 51 minutes opportunity was the one that I think everyone looks at and goes, yeah, that should have been it, right? Gomez, who, he's got lots of energy, but I'm starting to wonder about his mentality because he's just a bit of a headless chicken at the moment. And 51 minutes had gone. Weaver runs down the right-hand side of the pitch, slides a ball across, like a low-driven cross. And to be honest, Gomez is, what, a yard away from the post, from the goal, and he just can't quite sort of get his foot around it, pushes it out, and it hits the post and goes out for a goal kick. And that topped off probably three or four really good chances in that first half, first hour, as I said. And at that moment, you're thinking to yourself, geez, very much like the Palace game, what have we got to do here to score? Why are we not scoring goals, you know? And it then took another couple of minutes for Liverpool to get a corner. You know, it literally ticked onto the hour mark. Liverpool get their corner and Salah crosses it to the far post where Liverpool's most in-form player is standing unmarked to head home.
And it was literally like they let him do it.
That's what I said. It's unmarked.
It's just unbelievable.
I think, I don't know, but like looking at the way we were set up, I think Wiefer lost him. And I think he went into an area where Wiefer didn't go. He wasn't quick enough to react. And there was just no one there. And I mean, I don't understand that because, for a start, if you look at all of Albion's corners recently, right, one of their biggest tactics is to cross it to the far post and head it back. So they're very aware that that's a very good option. This is exactly what Liverpool did.
Mm.
And yet we decided just to leave everybody there and unmarked, in particular Ekitike.
It was a good goal, though, and that kid is epic.
Oh, he's fantastic.
I remember when we watched
him. It's not a surprise, though, is it, Andy? Do you know what I mean?
Well, no, but it's not. But also, he's kind of been a little bit of the shining star in a team that's not been performing very well. Mm. And I feel like he hasn't really got a lot of the plaudits because of the fact that the team ain't been doing great after the first little run. But I remember watching him live and both me and my son were like, this kid, you know, like when you see someone in the flesh,
you're like,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, you're
quite something.
Right.
Quite something.
The other thing that happened that I didn't mention, and I probably should mention because there was a few conversations about it online, was there was a tackle by Gomez. Just before half time, I think it was. We sort of had a chance, another one of our chances that we had just before half time. Gomez took a shot, it got knocked down, it was sort of skewed around a bit, and then it became loose. And Gomez goes to get the ball, I think Wirtz. And he goes to kick the ball and obviously misses the kick, and his foot goes really up high and ends up basically in Wirtz's chest, pretty much.
Yeah.
And a lot of people online obviously saying that should have been a red card. And I can see both sides of the argument. I think if you take a still of it, you go, that's a red card. When you see it in actual time, there wasn't a lot of force. You could see what he was trying to do. He went to kick and his leg went up, sort of thing. Yeah. It was a perfect storm of results. But I wouldn't have been surprised if he'd got a red card. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, again, my unbiased opinion is that in my world and my understanding of them rules, I think he's lucky not to have got one. But then if you look at, I think Eze playing for Arsenal the other week did exactly the same thing and got away with it.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe there's a meaningness to be kind of a bit more lenient on this. I don't really know. But I thought that rule was there because it's reasonably dangerous and actually, I think he could have done a bit of damage there.
Oh, he definitely could. And I think that was a little bit of an example as to what he was like on Saturday, Gomez. He was lots of energy, very ungainly, not much skill, and just all over the shop, very erratic.
However, Neil, however,
go on.
Sticking up for our man, Gomez.
Yeah, go on.
He's the only one, according to the stats that I've seen, that actually forced a save from Alisson in that whole game.
Oh, mate.
So you can look at all the negatives, but he's the only one that actually made that keeper make a save.
I understand that completely. Our shots on target, right, out of 14 shots, one on target.
Yeah.
We all know what the problem was. We didn't have a striker on the pitch.
And you had a good one on the bench.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, who knew? You know, who knew what we could need to do? Look, I'll get to the tactics in a second, right? I just want to finish off a couple of things about the game. And that is that, obviously, therefore, you know, get to the hour mark, as I say, we go 2-0 down. And then the game becomes even more stretched because, obviously, we are now 2 down. We've got to go even more forward, right? And the game just becomes
a bit like a basketball game, you know, end to end in that sense. Changes are made. We make, so we finally get Mitoma back on the pitch, as I said earlier. Yari came on too. Look, Mitoma obviously couldn't make too much of an impact after such a long time out, but I'm pleased he got the minutes under his belt. Ultimately, the last sort of 30 minutes of that game was just the same until the final whistle. You know, Albion pushing up, not taking their chances, Liverpool looking to counter, and they had about three other, Liverpool this is, they had about three other really good chances where they broke on us, obviously, and they were like one-on-one with a defender or three-on-one at one point and they stuffed it up. You know, it could have easily ended up 5-0. It could have easily ended up 2-2. You know, it was one of those games that was all about, can you take your chances? And stats-wise, right, Albion at Anfield had more possession than Liverpool, 51%, right? XG, Liverpool 1.82, Albion's 1.96. And most of that was from open play. It actually wasn't that much of a set play issue either. But, as you say, Albion only managed one shot on target for their whole afternoon's work.
Was it 26 touches inside the box as well? Yep. So, but again, mate, you're playing Liverpool.
Well, okay, look, let me get to this, right? So, look, in summary, it was an open, fairly good performance from Albion, fairly good performance. If you take away the scoring goals bit, the rest of it was actually a pretty good performance around the pitch. One early mistake obviously puts behind, and that just made the task even more difficult because we were stretched constantly then.
But Neil, what were the fans saying about that result? What's the general consensus online?
Reading the comments on Twitter, on Facebook, some other places, right? Supporters are, well, it's a mixed bag, right? Some are frustrated at the loss and the missed chances, obviously. Others, though, are supportive, saying like, you know, we played well, but it was just Liverpool, and anyone could lose to Liverpool in that sense, and that there's the usual sort of like infighting then between those two groups of people online. You can see the arguments for and against from both sides.
We have to say our side, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really interesting though, because there is a real split now in the fans, right? And from my perspective, I suppose I was in the frustrated side of things. And it's not about the performance of the players, but more, as I alluded to earlier, about the initial setup of the team, right? So let me give you a little short history lesson, right?
Looking forward to it.
Recent history for Liverpool. Let's just go back the last few games that Liverpool have played over the last month, right? Their home games. Let's talk about the last three Liverpool home games, right? They drew with Sunderland 1-1. Sunderland sat in a low block with fast counter-attacking, ended up with only Sunderland having 32% possession, right?
Yeah.
They lost to PSV in the Champions League 4-1 at Anfield, right? Yeah. PSV, guess what they did? They sat in a low block with fast counter-attacks, and PSV only had 36% possession. And then the game before that, their last home game before that, Premier League, Nottingham Forest, if you remember, Nottingham Forest beat Liverpool 3-0. Guess what they did, Andy? They sat in a low block with fast counter-attacks, and Forest only had 25% possession. Mm. So let's sort of sink that in for a second. Fast forward to this weekend, and our manager decides to play our usual game. Go man for man with high pressing and take on Liverpool in an open game with over half of the possession, right? I cannot understand this mentality. Because of that tactical setup, the game turned into a basketball game, as I said earlier, right? One team goes on the attack, the other one comes back at them end to end. It just turns into a game and a series of questions that has to be answered. Question one, who has the better quality in key moments? Well, Liverpool will, won't
they? Liverpool. I mean, that's the thing, you take them out of the game, then you would have been all right, I think.
Who has the better strikers?
Liverpool.
Who will take more of their chances, therefore?
Liverpool.
So all of the answers are Liverpool, because what you've done is you've levelled the playing field. You've said, we're as good as you, we're going to come and attack you, we're going to go man for man, and we're going to have chances and you're going to have chances. Whereas the intel, the data is sitting there telling you, if you go to Anfield, you produce a low block, you give them the ball, and then you counter-attack, there is very good data to suggest you will get something out of the game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's an ego thing. I don't know if it's a pride thing. It's just really strange, right? We've played counter-attack long ball a little bit this season from time to time. But for Liverpool at Anfield, when all the data is showing you what works, he decides to go against all of that and just go head-to-head with them. It just felt either arrogant or naive at best, and that's what I'm frustrated about. So there's no way an away side can expect to win at Anfield all of the time. I get that. But surely you look at what's worked for other teams, right, especially recently, and you go, okay, maybe we should try some of that. And that is my biggest frustration. I'm not angry. I'm just frustrated because it doesn't make sense to me for someone and a team. You know, it's not just Hörsler. There's going to be analysts. There's going to be all these different things. But as a group, we all went, what we'll do, because Liverpool are in a bad moment, we'll give them the opportunity to attack us, give them a lot of space, and we'll go head to head and turn it into a nice fun game for the people watching. I didn't want that.
I mean, that is the team that only just beat, what was it, on the Tuesday they beat Inter.
1-0, penalty last second. Yeah. Dodgy penalty at that.
But still, though, they got up, and I think maybe that gave them a bit of confidence, but I don't know, mate. Yeah. It's a tricky one.
But you see my point.
No, I do. That tactically, he got it wrong.
It doesn't make sense. There's a long of people online going, well, he did do well because look at all the XG. It's not his fault that the strikers couldn't score. And I'm
his fault he didn't put one on.
Exactly. And it's his fault for creating a game where there were lots of chances for both teams. He didn't actually have to do that.
No, I get it.
And that's what frustrated me about the whole thing. But the players on the pitch, they played pretty well. Yeah. The overall result, yes, wasn't great. But ultimately, you don't expect to get anything at Anfield, whether it be this year, this month, or next month. It's just one of those games that frustrated me in the initial setup. Mm. And I think, and if I'm honest here, looking online, talking about other people as well, I think there's still a lot of people that are struggling to understand what are we doing? What's a Fabian Hörsler team? And so there's always going to be these questions, mate, and they're not being answered.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think there's been a single week on this podcast where you've said, what's our identity? Who are we? What are we doing?
It's a bit of a shame. Look, final stat before I shut up, right? Yeah. Albion now have yet to win a game in December since Fabian Hörsler has been in charge. So we are still looking for our first win in December under Fabian Hörsler.
Do you know what's funny? I had that written down.
Winless
in last 9 matches during the month of December. Is there a Christmas curse?
No, there's a Fabian Hörsler one. I don't know what it is, mate. It is strange. We've got 3 more attempts, though, in this month currently, and we'll talk about those later.
Well, let's hope there is a Christmas curse.
Bah, humbug.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
Ho, ho, ho. Welcome back to a Christmas edition of Seagull Eagle.
Isn't that next week?
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I think
I'm just feeling festive.
Can I just ask, are we doing Christmas jumpers next week? Santa hats?
Yeah, you have to dress like an elf.
Yeah. Yeah. Could we maybe have some Christmas bells over the, you know, the intro?
I like the idea of that, actually.
Yeah.
I'll see what I can do. Get loads of money spent on pre-production and let's do it. Yeah, okay.
Let's do it. I'll come dressed as Santa.
So, tell me, little boy, what do you want for Christmas?
Okay, that took a turn now. That's a bit much.
All right, sorry.
Mate,
listen, we've got to talk about the European game that happened last week, haven't we?
I'm quite happy to talk about this one.
I know you are. Yeah. Mainly, I did remember what your prediction was for this game, and I believe you got it spot on.
Yeah, could you let that dude from the podcast know, from Brighton, that ate me alive in front of thousands of people to say that I didn't know what I was doing. Yes, I did get this one right, because truthfully, this is what should have happened.
Well, yeah.
And I'm doing myself out of the glory here, but truthfully, I don't think it, I would say if you went into a bookies and put a bet on, that would have probably been the safest bet, given the form and everything. But anyway, yes. Shelbourne, the mighty Shelbourne from Dublin, 0, Crystal Palace, 3.
Yeah.
Obviously, Thursday, the 11th of December. As I said, this was the night of my Christmas party. I just about managed to watch this one live, albeit on the go, actually, at one point on the train. I managed to run home and watch the rest of it. A little bit worse for wear, not going to lie. So I have had to re-watch this game.
That's probably
in
sensible.
Order to actually give you my honest opinion of it. But yeah, it was, believe it or not, Crystal Palace's first ever competitive fixture in Ireland.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Which is quite nice. A game where we needed to get a result if we wanted that top eight finish in the league. Now, let's not forget, Neil, let's not forget that there is more than one incentive for us to finish in this top eight.
Mm-hmm.
The obvious incentive is to get in the top eight and get a much nicer draw for the next round.
Yeah.
But also, if you don't end up in the top eight, and then you're going to go through the qualification. And the last thing that Crystal Palace need right now is more games. So I think
we would
be causing ourselves a lot more problems and a lot more banana skins to fall on potentially as well if we came back into contact with someone like Larnaca or someone like that. Lineups wise, I enjoyed this. I enjoyed the fact that there were changes. Canvo, Munez, Sarr and Mateta were all ruled out due to injury or illness. And I didn't like that bit, by the way, just to clarify. I felt quite sorry for them. Obviously, they were all four of them didn't travel due to either injury or illness. Benitez took the number one shirt, giving Henderson a bit of a rest. And then obviously we had Deveni, Sosa and Ketia all making the starting 11. And our good man, Uche, got his first start in a Palace shirt.
There was part of me that was quite surprised that Glasner didn't change it more in some respects, because of all the games you're going to play this season, this on paper should be one of the easiest ones, let's be honest.
But also could be the game that is the most embarrassing loss and potentially could mean that we haven't got a chance.
Well, I think that's the problem, isn't it? That you've played yourself into a point where you had to play this team rather than having the opportunity to rest a few players this game because you've got enough points already on the board. I mean, look, there's not loads of change, as you pointed out, but seeing Uche up front with Nketiah as well, Sosa, Deveni, and Benitez obviously in goal, you know, there's a number of changes to the side. I was very pleased to see Uche, actually, because I think a lot of people have obviously been waiting to see what he's actually going to make of actually starting a game and see how he gets on. And it didn't take him long, let's be honest.
Mate, he did really well. And he did what we knew he was capable of. But the problem is, as you reminded me a couple of times, when someone comes on for injury time, which is pretty much what he's been doing, what can you do in a game that's already either won or lost?
And also for your own self-development, how many minutes can you get? You know, you need more minutes to play better, understand the team, play with them. To get these few minutes here and there, it's no wonder that Glasner's not trusting him yet. Well, you've got to give him games to then for him to get better.
I do have a theory on this.
A theory on what? Uche?
Yeah.
Go on.
Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Glasner's not got any players, right?
Yeah.
Moaning he ain't got any players.
Exactly.
He's got a player sat on the bench, which he's not been playing.
Yeah.
Who's eligible to go and play the AFCON.
Right.
He hasn't played him.
So he hasn't been selected.
Man's not got selected for AFCON. Glasner's now got a player.
I don't know.
It's an interesting one.
I get it.
I don't know.
I felt maybe it was more the other way around, where it was the board or someone telling him, don't play him, because otherwise we'll have to pay and actually buy him, because he's on loan still at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. We're still a little bit unclear about what the terms of that are. but I'll be honest with you. I liked the look of him, and I thought that if you give him a bit more time, I think he could do some good things. Still got a bit of work to do, but look, this kid he's got it going on. Anyway,
so tell me about the game, because it was a rip roaring first half. Really, was where you got all your goals, wasn't it?
Oh, mate, look, let's just be under no illusion, right? Shelbourne are pretty much rock bottom of the league.
Mm-hmm.
We should have won this game, right? So I'm not trying to make it into something it wasn't, but also we did what we should have done and we did it well. So look, after a strong start and a few early chances, the first goal came from a lovely forward pass by Gehi, who picked up Kamada, who then played in Nketiah, who ran it into the box and superbly set up Uche, who was in front of goal to, well, Well, he smashed it home, didn't he?
He enjoyed it, didn't he?
And obviously, look, first start, first goal for Palace. And I think the thing that I really liked about it was a lovely team goal, right? It was the full article of the partial article that we saw Man City weekend. On this occasion, Uche was there to smash it in. He weren't there to smash it in at Man City.
It was a good team move, wasn't it?
And that's something that you don't see often at Palace, which is a striker in a box smashing it in. We haven't seen that in a while. It's normally a defender or someone random coming from somewhere random. But there we go. The second goal came on 25 minutes, shortly after VAR decided against what I would deem as a very clear penalty from taking Nketiah out in the box. I still cannot fathom how that was not a penalty.
I mean, I struggle with VAR when it's the Premier League. When it's European games, I struggle even more because there's even stranger decisions sometimes.
I mean, the guy got... it means nothing because we won the game, but I cannot fathom it. Like, referee didn't give it because he was nowhere near it.
Yeah.
And then it did get checked. You saw him in his ear. It didn't come up on the screens or anything, but you saw him in his ear, and then he went kind of no penalty, won't play on, even though the game had already carried on.
For those listeners, Andy is waving his hands like a referee.
There you go. Professional referee. I just can't fathom how a defender can take out a attacker in full flow and not get the ball and it not be deemed a foul. I mean, it's a foul, right? But anyway, we move on. Nketiah got his revenge because Pino played in Uche, who slid in and put it past the keeper, hitting the post. And then, of course, Eddie was there to tap it in.
Tap it in.
And Uche, I think, just did brilliantly to get his body in that position. Mm. So he's clearly got the instincts, right?
Exactly.
He's got it all there. Yeah. We just need to kind of work it into the first team.
He just needs games, Andy. I told you.
Mate, yeah, I'm with you. So there we go. And look, great for Eddie because, again, Eddie's got the poacher in him, right? Mm-hmm. And it's brilliant. So that's good. 2-0 up. The third goal came from 37 minutes. Pino's first European goal for Palace. And it was actually quite something. Did you see this?
Yeah, it was wonderful. Superb.
He hit the bottom left-hand corner, which was superb in itself, right? And I know we normally talk about the top or whatever, but from the position he was in, to hit that bottom left-hand corner, it was just really well worked. But not to mention the fact that he'd already taken on four Shelbourne players prior to hitting it into that bottom left-hand corner. You could see he was clearly trying to work his way into a position where he could play someone in and then looked up and went, actually, this is mine.
It was a good goal and I don't want to take anything away from him, but it also highlighted how bad Shelbourne were.
Of course.
like to be able to just walk through the team and put it in the bottom corner. The finish was wonderful, by the way, I agree.
Yeah.
But I did look at him and go, geez, I hate to say it, but it feels a bit like a pub side watching this.
But also, don't underestimate that Shelbourne were throwing their weight around. There was heavy tackles.
Anything they could do,
and some elbow. So what they lacked in talent, they made up for in aggression and physicality. But anyway, there we go. Wonderful, wonderful goal. And look, that is what... It's like watching your team play an FA Cup game or, against a lower team.
Sure.
That's the time when you want to see the difference in the players, don't
you? Of course you do.
You want to see them do these things they can't do in the Premier League.
Yep.
Anyway, half-time, 3-0 up. And this is where Glasner went, right, now I can make some more substitutions and probably play that team I wanted to play to start off with. So Lerma, Hughes and Esse came on.
I saw this. I was surprised. We finally get to see him.
Yeah, good to see Esse getting another chance to prove himself. And it could have been four straight after the break. Uche forced a good save from the Shelbourne keeper, which he did. I really thought that was going in. And then Richards came really close with a follow-up header. But then with 20 minutes remaining, something utterly bizarre happened. And I don't know whether you saw this, but it's something that you don't see very often.
I know what you're going to say, but yeah, go for it. Describe it.
Esse received the ball from Uche, right? And he hit it first time, goal-bound. And I thought to myself, yes, this is the moment. Esse gets his goal, redemption. He's back in. We've got some more options off the bench that he's actually going to use. What happens? Hits the post.
Yeah.
Doesn't just hit the post. Hits the post and then rolls all the way along the goal line. I'm not even joking. All the way along the goal line. Yeah. Like in perfect line with the goal. and then hits the second post before spinning back and almost kind of, the keeper's already dived and it kind of ends up just behind where the keeper was. The keeper kind of is on the floor going, oh, I've just let in a goal, and then looks behind him and goes, oh, it's right behind me, cheers. And that's kind of what happens. Unbelievable. And Essa's face was just like, what do I have
to
do?
It's very rare that you see a ball hit both posts and come out. And I think it's even rarer that it hits both posts, comes out, doesn't hit the goalkeeper and go in, if you know what I mean.
Or a defender.
It just sat there, you know. So, yeah, it was a little bit of bad luck there.
Oh, and thank God we were already 3-0 up at that point, because can you imagine if that was the moment that we didn't take that, you know, kicked us out of it all. Anyway, Essa, your time will come. I genuinely believe that now. And Glasner said some nice things about him after the game.
Oh, good.
Which is good to hear. So with 8 minutes remaining, Palace made a further substitution, bringing on Ben Casey.
I didn't know this guy. So right. When you said that, I saw the guy come on and I was like, okay, this must be one of the youth kit.
Well, yeah, he is. He's 17.
Right.
Academy graduate. He scored so far this season, he's done 15 goals in 20 games.
Oh, okay.
So he's earned his right for a trip to Ireland.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that he got on that plane because Mateta didn't make it.
Sure.
And he is a hot prospect, and really nice to see him on the pitch. I don't think he really got enough time to properly make a mark, but certainly anything I saw of him didn't put me off him.
No, the thing that always makes me realise that it must be a young kid is when you see the squad number and you'll think he was number 73 or something. Yep. So you're like, okay, right, yeah, got it. It's one of the young kids.
Yeah, yeah. Also, though, I thought we had to declare the squad to play in Europe, so they must...
You have a quota that has to be over a certain age, and then you can play anyone from your youth academy. So under 20, I think it has to be a teenager. You can play as many as you want.
Well, we might need that rule going into this, because that might be who we're playing. But yes, Ben Casey, well done, mate. Genuinely lovely moment, and look forward to seeing you on the pitch much more often. It would be lovely to see a few more players come through, because we have to keep reminding ourselves that players like Mitchell and stuff like that came from that.
Yeah.
So, yes, there we go. Anyway, as the full-time whistle blew, we had jumped, Neil, from 18th in the league to 9th. Just one place off the top eight, and a meaning that a win this Thursday in a few days' time against Coops, our next opposition, should, and I say should, be enough to get us into them auto qualifying spots.
It will. I was just working it out. I was having a look at the table before we started here, and I was looking at it, and there's a couple of teams that are 1 point ahead of you, but they are playing each other. So that basically means as long as you win...
Oh, you see, you've done more maths
than me. I had a look at it.
And I didn't think about that.
Yeah, so they're playing each other. I think it's Mainz and another team. I can't remember who it is, but they're playing each other at least. So
what if they draw, though?
Well, that's only 1 point. So if you win, you have more points, Andy. That's how the football works.
Not very good at maths,
remember that? So yeah, basically, as long as you win, you will go through into the top eight.
Yep. Yep.
Which I can't believe after some of the dodgy results you've had. But that's the issue. Not the issue. That's the way that the new format works now. You've got an opportunity to make a couple of mistakes, play a few different teams, and still get through. And, you know, ultimately, we all knew that Palace should be in the top eight.
Oh, we should be. But I think the thing that everyone forgets, mate, and we won't open this discussion again, but the thing that everybody forgets is we ain't done this before.
No.
So everyone's backing us to win a competition and it's our first time in Europe. It's a bit harsh. So look, well done to the team. I mean, look, we shouldn't be overly celebrating this, but I watched that game and went, lovely to see. Great to see some new people on that pitch. Mm. And I just loved seeing a bit of squad depth being used, because I know we're going to need them.
Yeah.
So there we go. All in all, a good display in Dublin. And on to the next game, Coops on Thursday.
Well, let's talk about that in a second. Mm. I just want to change tact slightly for a minute, if that's all right, just for the last few minutes of this pod.
Curveball.
Do you remember last week? You've mentioned it a couple of times, actually, but last week in particular, we were talking about empty seats at the Amex.
Quite a few of them.
Yeah, so there's a few things going on there. And I asked people to send in either their thoughts or what was going on, what they think is going on. So we had
Did our listener come back?
One of our listeners... came back to us. So Essex BHA. Hello, mate.
Hello.
is on the X accounts, and he is a as the title suggests, he's a Brighton Hove Albion supporter, has been for many years.
Neil, is this the guy that said like the Brighton bloke, but the Palace guy not really? But I don't want to listen to that.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. He said, "Where was his quote? Listen to the pod, enjoy it," which I thought was nice.
Yeah,
apart from the Palace bit. Fair enough.
I suppose. That's all right. He said the Palace bit, not the Palace guy. That's less personal. I don't mind that, mate. I understand because I don't like listening to Neil really. So, yeah, I understand how you feel.
Yeah. So he basically chimed in with some of the comments that we were talking about last week.
Okay.
And he was saying from his perspective, the reason for the empty seats is the football is dire and not entertaining. And this goes back to my point about...
Can't agree with him more.
Yeah, well, it goes back to my point about it's not necessarily about the results. It's about trying to watch a game and enjoy it. And it feels very stunted the way that we play a lot of the time and it doesn't feel quite right. Do you know what I mean? So this particular gentleman is saying the same thing. And the other thing he was making the point was is that the empty seats... He is scratching his head as well a little bit. He doesn't understand it, but what he does make the point is that Brighton does now seem to have a huge amount of football tourists go to the game. We get a lot from Japan, for instance, and we also got quite an international team, so we get quite a lot from other areas now. We get quite a lot from Turkey, and a lot of those seats are being sold again to tourists, and possibly... The reason for people going early is because they're tourists, they've got other things to do, or they've got a train to catch, et cetera, et cetera. So there might be reasons for that. But I just wanted to thank him for messaging us and having a chat. His last comment just made me chuckle a little bit. He said, if you live in Brighton and you leave early, give your head a wobble. And I think that's a fair point. You know, I don't understand local fans leaving the game early. I think it's a real struggle. And the team clearly need the support.
Mm. Oh, mate, it is mad. I can't get my head around it, and I can't get my head around... I just hope for you that it's something to do with the fact that something like the seats have been bought, but they can't be resold due to your new rules.
Or yeah.
That, like, there's some kind of reason that something's happened, as opposed to the fact that people aren't going, because you've got to relate it to... I don't know, mate. I mean, I was a season ticket holder years and years ago before I started going again. And I sat through four or five seasons of us nearly getting relegated to what is now League One.
Sure.
And I didn't enjoy
days.
I didn't enjoy my experience in any way, shape or form for years on end, but I still went because that was my football club. And so I can't fathom that volume of... Because we are talking about a lot of empty seats when you look at it.
Well,
I
don't think it's a lot. I think we have to take it on average when we look through the whole season. I think that the last few weeks, there have definitely been gaps. Mm. And my question mark is the driver, weather stroke Christmas stroke whatever, or is it... the way that we play, people are not being entertained, therefore, you know, they don't want to go, or they want to leave early because they're bored of watching the same rubbish. And you know, I'm not saying that they are rubbish, Brighton players, but the way that we're playing is a struggle to watch sometimes. And I think for Brighton fans that have been used and got comfortable with a certain way of playing, I think at the moment there's a little bit of a struggle going on.
I do think, and you're going to think that I'm sticking the boot in here, mate, and I'm genuinely not. I'm looking at the facts in front of me.
Here we go.
No, I'm serious.
Go on.
The fact that you were still actively selling season tickets up to the start of the season and then advertising that on... It was on my Prime TV.
No, stop.
We were
actively selling more season tickets.
Which means you still had seats. There's no waiting list.
No. So we had up until the beginning of the season, we sold our season tickets, the number of tickets that we would normally have for season tickets. Yeah. We then changed our policy and we decided to open it up to more season ticket holders.
Okay.
So it was only a decision literally as the season started, hence why there was loads of advertising going out and stuff.
Okay.
So I take your point that maybe we had got to the end of the waiting list or whatever. But,
Which just surprised me that even if you did change that, there should still be a big list of people that...
Well, yeah.
Like,
and there's not,
a two-year waiting list, for example, at Palace or whatever.
And there's not.
And again, I'm just trying to understand it because obviously there's the other bit, and I think we mentioned this earlier, which is it just that, like... You haven't got actually that big a catchment area.
I don't think we have.
It's not a slant to the club. It's more about geography, where you think about it, Palace have got a circle, right, on the map, right? You can draw a circle around it and you can go South London, that's wherever it is. And then obviously there's the overlaps with other clubs and things. Yeah. But generally, you've got the Croydon area, Norwood, Thornton Heath, all that. That's your Croydon area. Whereas Brighton, because you've got the sea, you've only got half a circle.
You've got half a circle and maybe the odd rubber rib full of people that haven't got any passports. I mean, that's about it. So, you know, it's a real struggle. And so, it always has been.
Yeah. So I just wonder whether that is something to do with it. But it is really weird. And I just hope for you guys that, because it's weird, because obviously living down here, all I see is people in Brighton shirts.
Yeah.
And I just cannot believe you can't fill a stadium.
I think we can fill a stadium. I think it's more about what's going on the pitch, is my personal opinion. But, you know, we're never going to really find out. But certainly in answer to the question about the season tickets, I think the advertisements changed suddenly because we changed our policy. We opened up more season tickets.
No, that's a fair comment. And funny enough, mate, you're saying about, do you remember we talked about the attendance figures over the actual people?
Yeah.
So, I think the thing to just realise here is that someone's paying for them seats.
Oh, yeah.
So
the money's
this is the bit
in
that I cannot fathom. Well,
that's my point about why people aren't turning up, because they're paying for the money and now they're deciding not to come. That's the question that Tony Bloom and Paul Barber have to think about when they're thinking about their manager.
Mm.
Listen, we've got to move on. We've got a couple of minutes left. Let's just quickly talk about the games that are coming up this week. So Palace, we touched on the European games of last week. You've got another one this week, haven't you?
Yeah, it's the last one in our group phase, and right? So the last one of my set of three home games that we're going
that's
up
right.
there to see.
And I don't know what Cups is. That it's an acronym, isn't it? The actual long name, I think it is, but I don't know what the actual long name is, but they're a Finnish side?
Yeah, Finnish side in the Premier Division, 7 times champions, Neil, in the Finnian? in Finland's Premier Division.
Right.
They won the title last season, along with the domestic cup, actually, to make it a double. So they are up there, titans of Finland.
And they're currently sitting 25th in the league on 6 points, so actually only 3 points behind you, ironically. So
1-1 drawn, 3 lost, 1.
They've got everything to play for to get into that playoff area as well. So what do you expect to happen? What do you think will happen?
I'm hoping.
I know what you're hoping for, but what do you think will happen?
I think it will be 2-0.
Okay. I think that's fair.
I think it'll be 2-0. And funny enough, this game, by the way, little stat here, this game against Palace on Thursday will be their first competitive meeting with an English club.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, we'll see how it goes.
There you go.
Then we move on to next weekend's Premier League games for both teams.
Who have you got?
We are at home on Saturday, the 20th, 3 o'clock kickoff, an actual Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff. Love that.
Against 2,000 people watching.
Oh, can't wait for this pod to be over. Sunderland we're playing.
Oh, you're in trouble.
Yeah, well, yeah. I know.
They just beat the Newcastle, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Did you see what they did with the score?
Mate, it was brilliant.
I loved that. If anyone hasn't seen the signage at the home game for Sunderland versus Newcastle on the weekend, so they changed the scoreboard, basically. So it said Sunderland 1, V, and then 0, visitors. Rather than Newcastle. Didn't even put their name up or anything.
They couldn't put their logo up. They couldn't bring themselves to do it.
Loved it. Absolutely. That's what I'm here for. That sort of shithousery. I loved it.
Yeah.
So we've got Sunderland. Current form, 2 wins, 1 draw in the last 5 games. Albion, 2 wins, 1 draw in the last 5 games. But the one thing that all Brighton fans will know, Sunderland, guess what they're going to do? They're going to sit deep with a low block and counter-attack. So 2-0 incoming to Sunderland.
This is why I said you're in trouble. Yeah. Not to, you know, I genuinely, they're the type of team you don't like playing against.
You've talked about it before. Everyone's seen it. That's why they're doing so well this season. And so the chances of Brighton winning this game are based on how much luck we get. That's all it is. Because we cannot break down a well-organised low block. The only thing I'm clinging to is something that you mentioned earlier, which is the African Cup of Nations starts next week and all the players need to get released. I think Sunderland are now losing 4 or 5 of their main players, in particular Siddiqui, which is one of their main midfielders, is off to AFCON as well. So hopefully we may face a slightly different Sunderland side. That's all I'm clinging on to.
Did I hear something about them getting special dispensation for... I'm not even joking. I swear, I was on TalkSport. They were talking about how they were letting some of them stay back because there were so many of them.
Bloody hope not, mate. But anyway, have you got on the weekend?
On paper, potentially a bit more of a favourable game.
Yeah.
Certainly more favourable than Man City, Leeds United.
Oh, Leeds. Dirty Leeds. Leeds.
So, and it's a weird one because it's on Saturday evening at 8 o'clock.
Oh, that famous, wonderful football time to watch a game. Well, 8 o'clock on a Saturday.
Hang on a minute. Work this one out, right? Saturday, 8 o'clock.
Oh.
So obviously we know why.
I've just realised why.
Because of all of the rearranged fixtures
this.
And the Arsenal game and all that. So I'm glad they did it. You can't moan too much because obviously it would have been worse. We would have had 3 games in a week.
Of course.
However, you got a feel for the away fans, the travelling fans for Palace because they've got to travel all the way up to Leeds for an 8 o'clock game, which isn't going to finish till what, 10:30?
Well, yeah, by the time you're allowed out the stadium and all that sort of stuff, past 10. Yeah.
How are they getting home?
Yeah.
But there we go.
That's the Saturday night, and then the next week after that is where you've got the League Cup game, which we can talk about next week. But so you've just got those really quick games, haven't you? One after the other.
Would have been, as I said, 3 games or 5 games over 10 days or something. I think is what it worked out at. So
okay. What do you think is going to happen on Saturday then against Leeds?
I think that we are going to rewrite history and win a game after a European game.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I think it'll be a draw. I get the feeling they'll nullify each other. I think it might be 0-0 or 1-1. That's what I reckon.
I think it will be a win, and I think our good friend Uche is going to come good. And that's it for another episode of Seagull Eagle. Thank you genuinely for listening. It's very nice of you.
Please make sure to follow the show so you don't miss the next episode when it drops. Now, we'll be back next week for our last episode before our little Christmas break to review Brighton v Sunderland and, of course, the Cups and Leeds United games for Crystal Palace.
You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X. And, of course, if you just search Seagull Eagle, you can get the conversation started.
You can drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com too, and
we'll see you next week. Until then,
jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Seagull!